When our guest graduated from college in 2011, he wasn't sure what he wanted to do for the rest of his life. But instead of seeking guidance from parents or experts or going to job fairs, he took a 4,000-mile walk across America to listen to the advice of strangers, to everyone he met. And he will share stories and insights from his quest for guidance with us this hour. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Our guest is the author of Walking to Listen, 4,000 Miles Across America, One Story at a Time. And we will welcome your questions for him about walking and listening. And I wonder if you have taken any steps toward listening more to really hear what others have to say. Was there someone in your life, perhaps someone you didn't know all that well, that might have given you some advice that profoundly affected your life? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Well, let me welcome our guest. Very happy to have with us Andrew Forstoffel, a writer based in Northampton, Massachusetts, who spent 11 months walking across the United States after he graduated in 2011. He is co-producer of the radio documentary Walking Across America, Advice for a Young Man, and the author of the book Walking to Listen, 4,000 Miles Across America, One Story at a Time. Good morning.
Good morning.
It's great to have you with us. So for many young people, when they graduate, they seek out the advice of experts or parents to figure out what to do with their future. Well, instead, you chose to take this 4,000-mile hike across the country. How did that come about?
Well, it wasn't as if I was doing it without the guidance of many mentors and teachers. First and foremost, my mother. And my dad too. And I guess when I graduated or in the year before graduation, I was just sort of looking around, my life and, home for structures and, experiences that might, take me into the depths of some of the questions that I had about myself and about America and about just being human. And I didn't see any structures that really resonated for me. You know, there didn't seem to be a path that would take me down into those questions. And I had heard of people doing long-distance walks, and eventually the more I thought about it, the more it seemed that a listening walk would be a really excellent way to immerse myself in some of the questions and start looking to just everyone, really, to assume that everyone had something that they might teach me if only I was listening well enough and earnestly enough, you know, and asking them questions as if they might have something to say that was worth hearing and learning from. And what was so, in some ways, shocking about the experience was that the moment I began listening and looking in that way was the moment I became open to receiving what people really did have to offer. Some of them, it seemed, didn't necessarily even realize that they might have had something to offer me until they started speaking. You know, I think there's a sort of interesting phenomena that can occur when an authentic, you know, authentically interested listener comes into your experience and asks you a question that you've never been asked before. All of a sudden you find yourself saying things you didn't realize you had in you. And people offered me that day in and day out. It was incredible.
And we'll get to some of those stories and what you learned from the people you ran into in a moment. But I'm curious, you know, Some college graduates might think, oh, you know what, I'm going to hitchhike across the country, or I'm going to go bum around Europe for a year, or I'm going to, you know, do this and that and the other thing. But I'm just, how did it come to, I'm going to walk, I'm going to walk, I'm going to go on a listening walk?
Well, slowing down felt critical to the experience. You know, it felt to me like slowing down itself would become a classroom of its own. You know, like, of course, all these, I hoped to meet lots of people and lots of different kinds of people and wanted to be open to what they had to share, but I suspected that something about the rapid velocity of my normal life, it seemed that it prevented me from a certain kind of openness. And so the slowing down felt like I'd be able, it seemed like I'd be able to see things that I would miss moving at 80 miles an hour, you know, in my mind or in a car. And then there was also something about the sacrifice of it, you know, the physical act of walking all those miles for people, you know, like I was walking to listen. And so when I met someone, you know, 1,000 miles in to the walk, and they asked me why I was doing it, I could honestly say to them, I've walked all this way to listen to you, you know? And something about that was profoundly moving for many people. And became, I don't know, a way for them to trust me. You know, I mean, of course I was walking for more than just that individual person. I was walking for lots of people and also for myself. But something about the sort of very boots on the ground, literal sacrifice of walking alone on the highway was sort of my was one small thing that I could offer the people who came into my experience. Yeah. I could say to them, "Hey, I'm doing this for you." You know.
Well, and
that was a bridge builder.
Let's get into just a little bit of the nuts and bolts here.
Sure.
Tell us the route you took, the whether there was some sort of strategy to that too.
Mm-hmm. I walked out my mom's back door in Chadsford, Pennsylvania, which is outside Philadelphia, and I walked south because it was October when I left and the winter was coming. It was getting cold, and I went as far south as New Orleans. And then I started heading westward and northwestward until I eventually made it to Half Moon Bay, California, which is right outside San Francisco. And I had a backpack full of 50 pounds of stuff. I had just basic camping gear. I had a mandolin that I would, you know, play songs on, and I had an audio recorder that I was using to record some interviews with people. And I had a flip phone. I did not have a smartphone. I wanted to be as present as I possibly could be and sort of, you know, open myself to being with the unknown. You know, I didn't want to know that a gas station was 0.3 miles away and then 0.2 miles away and just following the blue dot across America. I wanted to not know and learn how to not know. But I did have a netbook laptop, so I would plug in to Wi-Fi maybe like once a week whenever I could and map out the next week's route to have a general idea of like which turns to make on the highways, you know.
That's actually where I was going to, because
yeah.
I thought, oh my goodness, you need to know, you know, where you're going. I suppose you could have a paper map or something like that too, but to some extent, you don't want to get totally lost. Was it important to take that minimalistic approach for this walk?
For me, it was. Yeah, for me, much of the experience was about stripping away the many, many distractions that had sort of littered my life before, you know, all of the online avatars that I was, you know, maintaining, my social media personalities and even my past relationships that I cared deeply about. It was sort of like not stripping those away, but just taking some space from them in order to be radically present with myself, just in whatever moment I happened to be in, and also with whoever I was listening to or speaking with. So for me, yeah, taking away some of the, some of the flowery stuff of life was important. I did not want to be, one of my little rules while I was walking was no headphones, you know, like no podcasts or music or radio or anything. I wanted to just be listening to what was happening there, and also wanted to appear approachable. You know, I didn't want people to think they'd be interrupting me or anything. I wanted to learn how to learn how to be in the silence, you know, as in the first month or so, in some of the nights that I spent alone, you know, under a bridge or in the woods somewhere, I sort of realized with a bit of a shock that I didn't know how to be in silence. And I found that silence and stillness were very foreign and uncomfortable experiences. And that, to me, was kind of intriguing in and of itself. It's like, wow, when did silence and stillness become strangers to me? And I wanted to be able to welcome those things back in and learn how to, you know, be okay, just, abiding there. Yeah.
So you have, this long route and long periods of silence and solitude. Just talk about how you... How did you run into the people that you listened to?
So I was always walking on highways. I didn't walk on any trails because I wanted to be available and seen, you know, and I wanted to meet as diverse a cross-section of people as possible. And I felt that the people on trails would be sort of self-selecting. So I was on the highway. So every day, hundreds and sometimes thousands of people were passing me, and I had a sign on my backpack that said "Walking to Listen." And sometimes people would see that, and they would just pull over on the side of the highway and ask me what was going on. And often we would then get into it, you know, get into a conversation. And so that was one way I met people. Another sort of the main way, though, was I would try to get to a town or a village at the end of each day. And I would, of course, have to find some place to spend the night. And so I would start looking for permission to camp somewhere. And often that would lead to a connection with someone. So I would either knock on someone's door, you know, and ask, hey, and just say, hey, my name's Andrew. I'm walking across America listening to people's stories and asking advice. And I started in Philadelphia, and I'm heading west, and you know, here I am.
Wow!
I can't walk any further today.
And people didn't slam their doors.
I camped out on your lawn. Yeah, and a lot of times people would say yes, and sometimes even they would. Once we got to talking, and they intuited that I was a trustworthy person, they would sometimes even let me spend the night in their home, which was just a transformational experience for me to be trusted in that way. You know, have people welcoming me into their home and their hearth, and their children are sleeping in the room next door, or their wife or husband, and they trust me to let me in like this. I mean, it made me want to be just the best possible version of myself that I could be.
Wow. That is yeah. Amazing. What about you, though, trusting the people you ran into?
Yeah. I was a huge part of it. I mean, trust is built into the foundation of this whole experience. I mean, I love telling this one story. The very first day that I left home, maybe a mile or two into my walk, this car pulled over on the side of the road, and this guy got out, I'm thinking, you know, okay, cool, this is like the first interaction. You know, maybe this guy's going to have something important to tell me, and I'll learn something. Maybe I won't even have to walk across America because he'll
have the answers.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. So he comes upon me, though, and he was my mom's landlord, Bob. Thinking, Bob, what a coincidence, you know? And he goes, it's not a coincidence. Your mom's a wreck back at the house.
Oh.
You don't have to do this. I'm like, oh my God, Bob, this is not what I need right now.
So is Bob being a support vehicle then or something?
Yeah, well, he was concerned for me, of course. And when I, you know, said I do have to do this, and I am going to do it, he said, do you have a knife? And I said, I do. And he said, well, here, take another one. And he gave me a big knife, and he said, don't trust anybody. And that was a refrain I heard over and over again from all different kinds of people as I continued to walk. And understandable. I mean, we get fed with a sort of constant barrage of bad news, you know, of stories about how terrible we all are, how terrible human beings are, and the god-awful stuff we do to each other. And so, of course, people are going to be concerned when a young person is heading out into the wilderness, basically. And it was a paradox, though, because I was walking to listen and intending to, you know, be there for people and hoping that they would trust me with their truth, their tender stories, their frailties, just their humanness. But if I wasn't first trusting them, how could I expect them to trust me? How is that fair? You know, and so it's like, who's gonna take the first step? Who's gonna be the first to do it? And I was at least attempting to do that on my walk, and you know, I found that, and yeah, I don't think it's like a foolproof formula for connection necessarily, but I did find that in taking the first step and trusting people, even if they weren't giving me any cause to, the people responded to that. It was almost like in trusting people, I was, it's so radically too. It's like, yeah, I'm out here in the middle of nowhere. I'm far from home. I don't know anybody. I'm vulnerable, and I'm trusting you. And people, it seemed, it was like that. I was speaking to the part inside people that was trustworthy, and that was the part that showed up, even with people who, you know, might have seemed to be dangerous or threatening. And I've got, I could maybe tell a story or two, an example of that.
And I will. I'll ask for some examples. We'll talk about some of the stories, some of the advice that you gleaned on your walk across America when we come back. We are talking with the author of Walking to Listen, 4,000 Miles Across America, One Story at a Time, Andrew Forstoffel. It took off on this trek after he graduated from college in 2011. What he learned was a part of a radio documentary and now this book. And we will welcome your questions for him. Wonder if you've done anything that even remotely is similar to this, or if you've ever talked to strangers and really had your life change because of it. Or got some advice from someone you really didn't know all that well that really made a difference. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network. We are talking with our guest, Andrew Forstoffel, who walked 4,000 miles across America trying to get some advice from everyone he met. He wanted to know what to do for the rest of his life upon graduation of college, and we are talking with him about his journey and what he learned and welcoming your questions, maybe even your own experiences for him at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. Andrew, before we get to some specific stories, you had this sign on your back that read, Walking to Listen. But you also say that you soon discovered that you didn't really understand what those words meant at first. Rate your listening skills then, and how did it change as a result of your journey?
Radically. Yeah, changed radically. I think when I... at the beginning of the journey, before I had set out, I wrote these words on the sign, walking to listen, without without understanding that I might not understand what they were. It's like, okay, yeah, of course I understand what walking is and listening too. But it wasn't until I, began walking 20 miles a day, 25 miles a day, sometimes 30, that I became available to the nuances of walking and all the different flavors of walking and where walking can take you, you know, in your mind and in your heart, and the emotionality of walking and the, you know, I began to realize, whoa, there's really something to this walking thing. it's more than just putting one foot in front of the other. In some ways, yeah, sure, that's all it is, but there's so much available here, so much healing and insight. It's almost like a meditation, you know.
And then there's the listening part, and you notice that the better you listened, the more people would open up. What advice do you have in general about being a better listener?
It revolves around the work of becoming trustworthy. You know, what does it mean to be a trustworthy listener? And I became my work. That became the question that I was asking every day of that walk and continue to ask. What does it mean to become so trustworthy and so safe and compassionate that someone would entrust to me something they've never showed someone, you know? What would it take? The image I sort of have in mind is like, you know, what would it take for me to become so still and open and allowing that the most gun-shy creature in the forest would of its own volition come out of the woods into the clearing where I'm sitting and approach me and then sit down beside me. Or like one of the most ferocious beasts, like would be willing to sit with me. And we all have those shy creatures inside us and those beasts inside us. And so for me, it was learning how to be patient, learning how to listen with endurance, learning how to let go of agenda, you know, not, you know, to go into it not needing to necessarily get anything out of it, like to be willing to receive whatever someone had to offer, letting go of judgment. I mean, and this is another thing, it's like people shared some hard stuff with me, you know, stories of trauma and, you know, where they had been hurt or violated or where they had hurt someone else or violated someone else. People would share racist beliefs with me. People would share, you know, just their various prejudices and intolerances. And like, the work then became for me, like, how do I listen to that too? You know, how do I stay in connection with someone who is homophobic? You know, how do I continue to witness them without casting them away, banishing them, eradicating them from my heart, you know?
How did you do that?
I stumbled through it, and I continue to. You know, it's something I failed at often, you know, not knowing how to stay in connection with someone who was, you know, say, racist. But one thing I began to do was simply ask the question, why? You know, rather than get into an argument where I was intent on winning or dominating the conversation or proving a point or illustrating how wrong they were, I would simply ask why. You know, why do you believe that? And what is it like to believe that? You know, what is it like to believe that, you know, people of color are somehow inferior or untrustworthy or thugs? Or, you know, what is it like? What is that experience like to have that kind of ignorance, you know, and being kind about it, not it being very judicious and discriminating with my language, because even just one little word can be a dagger, you know, and so just really paying attention, being vigilant with how I spoke and making sure that I was coming from a place of compassion, you know, and remembering that, you know, it doesn't feel good to hate, you know, in my experience, you know, when I am in hate with someone instead of in love, you know, it's like, it doesn't feel good. And so trusting that somewhere in this hateful person's experience, they're hurting, you know, and speaking to that part of them.
And we could go on for a long time here, but we have full lines with listeners who have questions or have some of their own experiences to share. We'll get into some of the positive advice you got from the people that you ran across in as we go along. But let's go to Nikki in East Troy. Hi, Nikki.
Awesome. Good morning. Thank you, Joy. Hi, Andrew. Oh. I love this show. I'm sorry. This was awesome. My experience, because I will be 25 this year, and it kind of just hit me even more to figure out what I wanted to do for the next 5 years of my life. And this past November, I had a miscarriage, so that kind of set me back on a lot of hopes and possibilities and kind of crushed my dreams. But 2-3 years ago, I was able to drive out to California for a week. Last year, I was able to spend a weekend in Las Vegas. And then this year, I was able to drive to Denver, Colorado. What he said, everything that he said was just finding out different personalities. For me, it was also a little hard and nervous being an African-American girl because, like he said, you do come across racist or prejudiced people, and it is a little scary. But as soon as I open my mouth or as soon as I smile and people see, you know, my personality and it shines and it's bubbly, that was a way for me to open up the door conversation. I would ask people questions as, you know, how long they were married, if it was a couple. I'd ask a single mother, how is it being a mom, a teacher that I met before, you know, how did you get into teaching? People that I've met in Denver have come from everywhere, from New York to North Carolina, you know, what made you take this path? I just like to ask questions because I'm very inquisitive about anybody's life and what advice they have to give me. And there was a woman I met specifically from Texas in Denver who told me, especially after a miscarriage, to never give up on love, relationship, or life. For me right now, because she said that I was so young, that I should take advantage and just have fun and to travel like I am doing. So I've made that a goal this year to travel a little bit more. I do work 2 jobs, so I'm able to save up money a little bit quicker and a little faster, just to plan out trips in advance. So right now I have, you know, Washington, D.C. planned out. I have Atlanta planned out. I wanted to go to New Orleans. I wanted to go to Seattle, Washington as well. So there's just a lot of different places that I want to go just to meet different people to get more advice. And I love his idea of not having the technology and just being alone and learning how to appreciate your solitude before you can appreciate somebody else in your life.
Nikki, what a great story. And I'm so sorry for your loss, but I'm thrilled for you that you are on your journey right now and enjoying your travels and meeting the people you're meeting. And when you're talking, when you're striking up conversations, Nikki, with these people that you meet in these various locations, you're just seeking to connect and communicate with someone. You're not, and maybe learn from, but it's
There's no judgment, like he said. You know, they don't judge me. I don't judge them. It's just literally finding a stranger to connect with and making those connections and to have a story to take back home with you to share with somebody else.
Well, it looks like she can write a follow-up a book, Andrew.
I'll stay tuned for it.
Isn't that a wonderful story, though? I mean, and again, I'm sorry for her loss with the miscarriage, but here she was getting advice from strangers on how to, a woman who she didn't really know said, hey, take advantage of your youth and travel and you know, experience the world. And so, I mean, that's a pretty valuable piece of information.
Yeah, and it's there's another paradox in there, I think, of how there could be beauty and connection that arises from pain and woundedness. You know, like the kinds of connections that she was able to experience having gone through this miscarriage and then having the courage to speak about it and ask questions about it, that then becomes an invitation for people to share their stuff. I mean, we're all wounded and frail and vulnerable, you know, and when someone has the courage to show theirs, that emboldens or that can embolden others to then show what they got and the kinds of, like, man, I was was going to say lovemaking almost, that can, the creation of connection that can come from sharing our struggle. To me, that's what redeems. There's redemption in that. It makes the struggle worth it, you know, the kind of love that can come from talking about it with each other.
Nikki, thanks again for the call. And, you know, this her story, I don't know why, but it reminded me of one of the people you met on your journey. Andrew, someone gave you a ride, a woman gave you a ride, and she began telling you about her hysterectomy. Tell us how that came about. And
yeah, well, she pulled over on the side of the road, saw that I was wearing, Simon said, walking to listen. She had her two daughters in the back of the minivan, and this is in North Carolina, and I told her what I was doing, and she, something in her sensed the sincerity of my intention. She felt that, trusted it, and then just started sharing her story right there. And we were just on the side of the road, like we weren't going anywhere together. She was just, I had the time, and I was offering that time, and she was ready to receive it. And then, right, she just started telling me the story of her life, and this, and most recently this hysterectomy that she had just had, and what that was like for her. And again, what moved me about it was, and what sort of struck me about it was how quickly she went there, you know? I think, and seeing how many people were so quick to take me up on my offer of listening, to me was sort of proof positive that there are just too few listeners out there, you know? It's like it was as if so many people had been waiting years for someone to just, like, to show up that had an earnest desire to listen, and who doesn't have that desire, you know?
Yeah, we want to be listened to.
Yeah,
we want to be heard.
Yeah, validated as right, worthy of being seen, and having something to offer. You know, it's like what did you learn from that miscarriage? Like what did you harvest that might be of some nourishment or sustenance to me or my children? Or, you know, it's like entering that mode of, like, we're all in this thing together. You know, this human experience is hard. It's just hard. And we're each going to have to suffer. And what are you learning from it? And again, there's redemption in sharing what's learned, what's seen, what's understood.
Chris in Burlington is with us. Hi, Chris.
Hi, good morning, Joy and Andrew. I was really struck today with your show, and Andrew, with your experience. I don't want to talk too much because I'd like to continue listening, so I'll try to make it brief here. I'm a truck driver, and I've always been a bit of a rambler myself, and at some point I realized I must be a good listener, because a lot of people say that they enjoy talking with me, you know, and it, for me, it's the vulnerability, you know, really making myself vulnerable at when I'm comfortable and in the right conditions. And then, you know, like you've said, you honor people's feelings. You know, it doesn't mean you have to always agree with them, but you honor, you know, that they're a person. And words are magic. They really are. So when you take the time to listen, you're kind of accepting their magic. And so I'm looking forward to looking into your podcast. And if your book, you know, go ahead and make an audio book for us truck drivers out here. We really enjoy it. So, all right.
Working on it.
Yeah.
That's great, Chris. Any reaction, Andrew?
Yeah, I mean, what it brought up in me is, you know, remembering that, you know, when... just what a gift it is to be given someone's truth, you know. So whether that's a tender, vulnerable story of loss or heartbreak, or whether it's someone's very active anger, you know, if someone trusts you enough to show you how angry they are about something, you know, and to realize that that's a gift they're giving you right there, you know, that and to honor that and to say thank you for trusting me enough to show me how much you care about something, or to show me how how hurt you got and how angry that makes you. Like, thank you. You know, because what an honor it is to receive gift upon gift, you know, someone's truth. And I also, before we move on, it reminds me of a truck driver I met while I was walking in Texas. And if he's out there, Mel Jack, I just want to honor Mel Jack right now. He saw me walking on the side of some highway in Texas, pulled over, the truck pulled over and pulled over behind me. I didn't realize, like, the guy was stopping for me when I heard this voice behind me. Excuse me, sir, excuse me. I turned around, and this truck had pulled over, and this guy was walking toward me, this big trucker, and he had two Gatorades in his hand.
Aww.
And gave them to me, and when I told him what I was doing, he got so excited and said, well, you're going to be walking my route, for my trucking route, for the next week or so. So every time I pass you, you can count on a cold drink.
How cool.
And he pulled over twice at gas stations before I got to the gas stations and said, hey, we got this young guy coming through. Get him whatever he wants. It's on me. And then the last time I saw him, he pulled over again, and he got out of his truck and gave me a big water cooler. And he said, I went to Walmart and picked up this Bubba cooler, it was called, and he said, I know you got the hottest leg of your journey coming up, and I want you to have a cold drink whenever you need it, because I'm not going to be there to give you one.
Wow. I bet you that taught you something about the kindness of strangers, huh?
Yeah, and totally humbled me. And as I was, like, at that point, I was pushing all my stuff in a baby stroller because it was so hot and the distance between towns was just too long to carry 50 pounds, and I bent down to lash this Bubba cooler to my baby stroller, and I burst into tears, you know, to just feel so supported and seen by a complete stranger, you know.
What an awesome story. And truckers are awesome. Chris, thank you for your call. And we will take more of your calls with more of your questions, maybe your own experiences of listening to strangers, talking with strangers. 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. Our guest is Andrew Forstoffel. He is the author of Walking to Listen, 4,000 Miles Across America, One Story at a Time. We are talking about listening. We're talking about walking. We are talking with the author of Walking to Listen, 4,000 Miles Across America, One Story at a Time. Andrew Forstoffel is our guest. He's a writer based in Massachusetts. He spent 11 months walking across the United States in 2011 upon graduation from college, and he was seeking guidance and listening to the advice of everyone he met. So we are talking about what he learned on that journey, and we're welcoming your input. And our next caller is Ashley in Coloma. Hi, Ashley.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. So my experience is a little more targeted than your guest. I'm 28 years old, and I'm trying to learn how to can and preserve my own food. And my family members that had that knowledge are no longer with us. And so when I'm in the grocery store and I run into someone who I think might have that experience, I go ahead and ask them, you know, what's your favorite way to do this, or what tips do you have? And I've found that people love telling their story, and I'll end up in the grocery store for 2 hours when all I need is a few carrots. So,
well, I love that story, Ashley, because you're getting advice on something, but you're talking to, for instance, just strangers at the grocery store about how to do this preserving or canning or whatever the case may be.
Yeah.
Yeah, people like to share. They'd like to share their knowledge, Andrew? They like to feel important and helpful?
Yeah, I think so. And what I love about that story is how it calls to mind this fact that, right, you don't have to walk across America to connect with people in profound, meaningful, nourishing ways. And actually, it's like imperative that we realize that. I mean, for me, like the sweet challenge of the last several years, not walking across America, is the question of how do I continue to reach out to people, to strangers in my just my routine, in my everyday. You know, how do I continue to listen in that way?
Yeah. Well, you know,
I love that she's doing it in the grocery store.
I do too, Ashley. Thank you for calling. I mean, you're right. You don't have to walk across America. A story where my husband and I were on vacation somewhere, and we went to a diner. We ended up sitting at the counter. New place, didn't really know much about the community. Somebody sat next to us, and you can just strike up a conversation with, you know, hey, what's good on the menu, or you can ask a stranger something like that, and we got engaged, and we talked the entire lunch hour and then some, and learned all sorts of things about this this man's life and how he was going to be retiring and how he was going to move, and his daughter was going to be a star in Hollywood. And I mean, it was just I'm not sure I learned a lot of life guidance from it, but it was just a good human connection, right?
Yeah, totally, mm-hmm. Totally.
Let's go to Edward in East Troy. Hi, Edward.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Andrew, I just want to say I think it's great what you're doing. You know, people out there, I think it's a great example to set, and people want to be heard. I've been a social worker. I've been working with adults with disabilities and mental health issues for about 20 years. And so listening is completely integral to my job. I wouldn't have a job if I wasn't a good listener. Mark Twain actually said that listening is more than waiting for your turn to talk.
Mm.
Kind of ironic, because that's what I was just doing for the past 10 minutes.
but, sorry, Edward.
You know, it's very true. No, that's mm-hmm. fine. It's so true, because I found myself learning these things over the years that, we all have opinions. We always have something that we're just bursting and waiting to say. But when you're doing that and someone's talking to you, they can see that on your face, because so much of the communication is nonverbal. You know, only like 10% of communication is what is said. The rest is nonverbal. So when you're listening and you're responding in a way that your face is saying, I'm not really listening to you. I just want to say what I want to say. People can see that. They can read it very easily. So it's really important to be aware of that and, you know, reflect what people are saying to you. So I'm sure, Andrew, you probably experienced that while you're waiting to say something or you're listening. It's a good technique to sort of disarm someone too. Like you were saying, you have people that you might not agree with what they're saying, but when you can reflect what they're saying and kind of say back to them what their important things are, you know, that they're concerned about, it disarms someone, because it lets them know that they're listening or being heard. That's really what, you know, what people want. They want to be heard. They want to be validated.
Yeah.
Thank you very much, Edward, for calling. Anything further, Andrew, on that?
Yeah. I mean, for me, it has to do with humility. You know, it's like, as I'm listening to someone, I'm remembering that I don't know everything, you know, and that they know something I don't. It's called their life. It's called their experience. It's called what they've seen that I simply haven't. And so it's just coming at it from that humble posture of, sure, I've learned a few things, I've experienced a few things myself, but each and every individual has got something that I don't got, you know? And so can I be humble enough to remember that and then receive that? Very important.
Edward, thank you. Randy in Portage is with us. Hi, Randy.
Hey.
Hey, what's your story?
Well, the thing that stood out was when he was talking about fear. I was a missionary as a young man. I felt called to be a missionary to Mexico, and some people say, oh, you're a hero, but many people would, strangers would stop me. I remember a little old lady grabbed my arm in the grocery section, and said, are you that young man that's going to go off to Mexico? And I said, well, yes, I am. And she said, well, I think you're stupid. And she wanted to let me know how stupid I was and how dangerous it was. And once I got to Mexico, of course, everything was fine, but I was in northern Mexico, and the people I worked with there were very careful to let me know, now, don't go to southern Mexico because, oh, it's dangerous over there. Well, after a year or so, I moved to southern Mexico, and what did I find? Well, I found it was great, but when I was in the city of Nayarit, the people would say, brother, it's so good that you're here helping us and working with us, but don't go up into the Volcan area because it's dangerous, and so on and so forth, and on to Albania and China and Mongolia. Wherever you are, somebody's always saying, you know, oh, you're fine here, but don't go over there. And so when he talked about fear, that's what stood out to me. And so I would just, I feel a commonality in experience, and I know that he experienced that everywhere he went to some degree, and he spoke about it. And so I would just say, hey, man, get on that soapbox and shout it loud, because that's where it starts, is get over fear. Fear is a lie. Don't listen to it. Go forward.
Amen.
Yeah. Wow. So, and that's right. That holds a lot of us back, you think, Andrew?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the one of the things I'm most grateful for and to about my walk is how the structure of the experience basically forced me to encounter my fear and then walk right into it each day. Because I was footbound, you know, I couldn't just drive away, you know, I couldn't just drive past the experience or through it, you know, I had to walk into it, and so you know, I would see someone on the side of the road, and well, here's a little story. For example, I was in the middle of nowhere in North Carolina, and I saw this sign up ahead, and when I could finally read it, I saw that it said inmates working. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking, oh my God, like I'm going to have to walk into this throng of inmates, you know? And had I been driving, moving at high speeds, I wouldn't have been forced to experience the fear and then investigate the fear and then have the opportunity to move through it and past it into reality, into the truth of who these people actually were. You know, I would have been just operating in my assumptions about who they might be. And so instead I was like walking, there was nowhere else to go, and eventually I saw the group of inmates up ahead, and I'm freaking out, you know, about what are they going to do to me, and, you know, there's going to be some sort of prison riot, and, you know, I'm going to get hurt, and, you know, continuing to walk forward, nothing else to do but walk forward, and I came upon this group, and they were women, which was the first piece of reality that countered my assumptions about who they were. And this one woman, they were picking up trash.
I'm so sorry. We have just a minute to go, so maybe we can, I'll have you speed up that story with the lesson learned, perhaps, from it.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Cut to the conclusion. Mm-hmm. They were good people. You know, we got to walk together for a few miles, and they told me some of their stories. And when I shook hands with them goodbye, one of them said, hey, be careful out there. Not everyone's as nice as us.
Ah.
You know, so getting over the fear, exactly.
Well, you know, maybe that's a good place for us to conclude. It's been fascinating. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks, Troy.
Andrew Forstoffel is the author of Walking to Listen, 4,000 Miles Across America, One Story at a Time. Thanks to Chris Molina and to Marika Suval for producing this program. Thank you for listening. I'm Joy Cardine. Tomorrow at this time, it's the Week in Review. This is the Ideas Network.